Here's a little something you may remember from the good old days.
I feel so old.
You're old.
You're so old.
I'm so old.
So old.
We're so old.
You're old.
You're old.
The senior tour rolls to a stop, at least for the next couple of weeks. Brian Sexton, senior correspondent. John Osier, senior writer. Joe Fortunato, just senior, here for another Senior Moments. And I say it rolls to a stop because it's vacation time.
Sure, absolutely.
Are you ready to be done with football for a couple of weeks?
I'll still be riding the ozones. I do it every day, so I'll be thinking of football a few hours a day. But for a while, yeah, it's time to get away. And
how long is that streak, by
the way?
Time
to recharge. It's in the couple of thousand days. So,
have you done anything else at any point in your life this long?
I've woken up and gone to sleep at night. No, I mean, it's not really, but I usually write something every day in the jobs I've had. So answering questions about football is not that big a deal. I mean, people act like it's a big deal. It's fun, and I enjoy the interaction with fans, so I'm not complaining.
I don't know if anybody who's listening to this wants to know, but I do. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with a couple weeks off? What do you do, John? What do you do?
Like, ever. We'll be going up to New York later in the summer to see our son. And other than that, just some R&R. Just some hanging out and, you know.
Like literally hanging out, like a hammock?
Yeah.
And a.
I'll do a lot of reading. And
an IPA.
You know,
and
a few IPAs now. So
one final question for you, and then I've got a couple questions about this football team. But so what are you reading?
I haven't really chosen what I'm going to read yet. I've been reading a autobiography of Elvis Costello, which has been good, enjoyable. It's long. It's about 700 pages. That's taken me a while to get through. And I may delve into some history. We'll see.
All right.
So I look forward to it, though.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I want to hear what it's about. Sure. We come back.
Absolutely.
John's book club. So just for fun, because there's really nothing pertinent to talk about
right
now, a couple questions on the Jaguars. First is, when you look at the roster, it's clearly more talented of a team than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
But are they as talented as we think they are?
Well, I'm interested to hear your take on this, because we've been talking, and it's been this assumption, and I think it's a correct assumption, that, boy, the roster is better. Boy, there's all this talent. And there is talent. But a lot of the guys that we're basing this conversation on, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Marquise Lee, Brandon Linder, Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey. There are a bunch of guys who, if you really look at it, have had one good year. A.J. Boye.
He said two.
A.J. Boye.
Yeah. One and a half?
One where, I mean, hasn't really ever been a full-time starter for 16 games. You know, and I'm not discounting his talent. He obviously is a guy everybody wanted. I think he's going to be really good for this team. But if you look at the big picture over these guys' careers, usually when you think about really good teams, you want a bunch of guys who have done it for 3 or 4 years. This team's got a bunch of guys who have done it in spurts, who have shown what they can do, but it's now time for these guys to put together en masse a second good year. Ngakoue, another year with 8 or 9 sacks. Telvin Smith, another good year without the mistakes that sort of hampered him early in his career. And if you think about it, all these guys sort of have that. I think all of them have a lot of potential to do it, but are they as good as the outsiders think they are? The book on this team, and you know it, boy, if they can just get quarterback play, everything else is ready to go. I think everything else has a chance to be ready to go, but I think there are also a lot of young guys who need to show that they're as good as we all think they are.
Well, over the last couple of years, you know, they've brought in a player, and I'll just use Jeremy Parnell as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Had not been a full-time starter. Played pretty well 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, not so well. But, of course, he had a groin injury now
sure.
that we found out that kind of lingered all year long. So he hasn't been the dominant player that they thought they were getting.
Right.
Or that they hoped, probably the better word, that they hoped they were getting. So I kind of look through that lens and say, all right, well, I get A.J. Boye, and I watched him last year, and he played sensational.
Absolutely.
Especially in that playoff game against the Patriots. I thought he played very, very well. I get the talent. Can he come to Jacksonville and do it?
Mm-hmm.
Because Jeremy Parnell played well
right.
in Dallas when he was in the lineup. Okay, so is Boye going to bring that?
Right. Is he going to be Malik Jackson who brought it last year?
Yeah.
Or is he going to have that thing that a lot of free agents do where you're not even really sure why, but it just doesn't click as much in the new city? I think at corner, as you know, I think you agree with me, opposite Jalen Ramsey with what should be an improved pass rush, I don't doubt that Bouye is going to be good, but I'm just making the point that, you know, there's a lot of guys here who don't have 3 years in succession where you go, I know what this guy, like Calais Campbell. You know what Calais Campbell is. I think you know what Brandon Albert is. They are guys who their body of work shows if they're healthy, they're going to be good. A lot of guys on this team have, if they're healthy, they can be really, really good, but can you rely on them to do it all the time? I think they can, but I don't think it's a given.
Carter the horse here. What if Peyton Manning's the quarterback of this roster? Do we even ask that question?
Right, or now I'd Phillip, be amazed.
Or Philip Rivers. Right. But you get what I'm saying.
Sure.
Is it, we're talking about the quarterback. So is it the quarterback that takes this talent that we have some questions about and helps it fulfill its potential, right?
Yeah.
Or does the potential here have to help the quarterback fulfill his?
Well, my son and I were actually talking about this the other day, and now we were debating, and it was about Marcus Mariota and Andrew Luck. And I said, look, Andrew Luck, he thinks Mariota's better. I'm more of a Luck guy. I've just seen him do it more. He was like, Andrew Luck, how good's Andrew Luck? Well, I looked up Andrew Luck's stats last year. Something like 41-13. I mean, yeah. Or maybe 34. But it was many to not many, put it that way, in terms of touchdowns and interceptions. And I said, Jake, if Andrew Luck was quarterback of the Jaguars, how good would they be? He was like, they'd be pretty good.
Right.
And I'm not saying Andrew Luck specifically, but that level of quarterback – I think most people think that this would be a pretty good 9-7, 10-6 team if you can get that sort of 3-1 touchdown production interception ratio and feel good about it. So yeah, I think quarterback's big, but I was making that argument with my son based on I think the rest of the roster, I think it's pretty good. At the same time I said that, I said, you know, I haven't seen it do it over multiple years, so maybe I'm just assuming they're good.
All right, so that brings us to the second question, and that's the offensive line. And there are a lot of people that question whether or not this group can play well enough. Now, I believe that if they play well enough, I'm not saying Dallas Cowboys, because I don't think anybody would argue that this talent level is that talent level. But if they play well enough for Leonard Fournette to actually be able to help Bortles, right, I've thrown this number out there. I don't want Blake Bortles to throw the ball any more than 425 times. Whole season, 425 times in 16 regular season games, right? Which is about what Marcus Mariota threw last year when he had a very productive season.
That's a very good thumbnail gauge.
Go run the ball, take the pressure off, let the defense rest a bit, play some field position situations. Then you got a really talented roster. So the question is, what's with the offensive line?
Let me ask you, do you think they can be a good run blocking unit?
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at the talent. Now, Brandon Albert is a better run blocking tackle than what was there a year before with Kelvin Beachum.
To me, that's why they did that.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've got Cam Robinson, who is one of the best five easily, and it looks like a tremendous football player. He's going to play guard. Okay. Well, that's not the first time your future left tackle has started a guard. John Ogden is the best example. But
and you would think that run blocking is where he'll be able to be good quickly.
He's so big and strong.
Right.
We know what Linder is, the best offensive lineman and a guy that can be very good. He's got to stay healthy. That's not something he's done well.
Right.
Then we already talked about Parnell. We think he's better than a lot of people give him credit for. So the question then is right guard.
Right.
AJ Cann.
And I think, you know, the list you just gave, I think that's their five.
Yeah. And
I think that's what they're doing. Linder gets the edge at center because he's been doing it. I think Cann will be the guy until he shows he's not the guy. Can they run block? Interesting that sometimes you have to step back from a team because you've been viewing it so closely. And everybody asked me all offseason, well, why aren't they doing more on the offensive line? Why? First of all, they've changed 40% of it. So it's not like they've stood pat on the offensive line. But from their point of view, I think the numbers, I think they had four games over 100 yards rushing and well over 100 yards rushing once Hackett took over. I think that's the number. But they were better running the ball after Nate took over. They weren't great every game.
Well, they had six left guards. Six.
Sure. But overall, they had the Kansas City game. They had the Colts game at the end of the season. They had the Titans game out here. I think there was one other where they were pretty significantly over 100 yards, where they ran the ball like you would think. After the game, if you asked the coordinator how was it, he would have gone, yeah, we can win doing that. Is that what they are? I think part of them must believe that there was something to that, and it didn't need to be absolutely overhauled to get where they want to go.
So, and obviously, scheme is not something that we can digest play-by-play how they're doing and go back. But I remember one play, and it cost them the game. It was third down and two in Kansas City territory, and Don Terry Poe got inside of A.J. Cann and had a one-on-one with Chris Ivory that he tackled in the backfield on Chris's big day. That one play is where I say you can't run the ball, or you proved you couldn't run the ball, because it was when you needed it.
Right.
So that's why I point out Cann, because that play against Poe stands out. You got to be able to do
that.
And
he didn't have as good a year as he should have had last year.
No, he didn't. So if running the ball, and I think you would agree, is not about 150 yards per game, which is what this team did so well with Fred and Mojo in 2007. Right? It's what powered this. The last playoff team the Jags had was powered by the running game. Took the pressure off of David, right? First-year starter, really. Made everything work.
They were a dangerous team with that bunch.
They were. So in order to do that again, you must be able to run on third and two against Kansas City's biggest defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do it?
And I think, also to your point, if you remember Doug Marrone at the end of last season, the one thing he got criticized for, and I believe it or not, in two games you can get criticized, was at the end of the Colts game when he ran, I think he ran three times to set up the field goal. And he came out right after the game in the press conference, knew what question was coming, and said, "That's what I do.
Yeah,
that's what I believe." So I think speaking to your point you just made, he knows that's when you've got to be able to run. Philosophically, this man knows that's when you've got to be able to do it. He has echoed your thought. You got to be able to run when you need to run. I think there'll be a, you know, it's unrealistic to think they're not going to pick up every third and two against Harry Potter.
Well, no.
But I mean, I think they're going to, I
when
do
the game's
believe
on the, line.
The commitment to it will make them better enough that this will feel more like a running team than it has. Is it going to be enough to get him to 10 and 6? I don't know, but I can't believe with this approach that you're not going to have a different sense of what this offense is, if that makes sense.
And here's the final question, and it does make sense. What's the impact for Tom Coughlin? What does his presence in this building, back in the franchise that he helped lift off the ground in 1994, what does it do? What's it worth?
I think it, you're going to see it more manifest. I think what may happen is this. If the Jaguars win with this approach, you're going to see Tom get a lot of credit, when in fact a lot of the approach is actually being put in by Doug. I mean, but I think they're pretty much in lockstep. So I think it'll be hard to discern. Meaning, if they win, they're going to be a tough physical team that reduces turnovers, and everybody's going to think back at the callous disregard for the ball and think that's Tom Coughlin's stamp. Well, I think it'll be Doug Marrone's stamp too. But you can't underestimate the mood of the organization under Tom. I'm hard-pressed to say exactly where you'll see if you're going to see it in week five when they're a little bit tougher, but you certainly see a more diligent, tough-minded approach. And I think somewhere on the line that has to be attributed to Tom a little bit, although I think he'll get more credit and some will be taken away from Doug for the reasons I just stated.
So I go back to the day that they announced Doug and then Tom. Remember, it was Doug first, and then a little while later, oh, they're bringing Tom.
Right.
So there were some sexy names out there. Not that sexy means anything when it comes to hiring a coach. The fact that Doug Marrone was being sought by Denver and San Francisco for interviews tells you, you know, his value in the league. People know he's a good coach. But there wasn't a lot
Which I think is an underestimated point sometimes. I think people overlook that sometimes.
Oh, they do. And Doug, coming from the staff previously, taking over, well, immediately that casts a cloud. People go, whoa, hold on.
Right.
Human nature, right? Have they really changed anything? And then they hire Tom. And all of a sudden, at least in my brain, it clicked. And I think in a lot of other brains, too. Wait, Marrone is like Coughlin. And Coughlin's won two Super Bowls. And Marrone's a guy that people were interested in other cities. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the day they announced them, then the day they introduced them, they had the photo of Tom and Doug together. And it just clicked in my brain. This is probably a good pairing.
Right.
Because Tom, Doug respects Tom.
Absolutely.
And Tom can set the pace. Even for a guy like Doug who sets the pace, Tom can set the pace. And he does that
better than most. I think setting the pace is a good phrase with that.
Yeah.
I really do.
He does. Because His expectation level is so high. You see it when he walks around the building. I see it. I see the attention to detail in other departments, mm-hmm. right? Where before it was kind of like, yeah, let's do this and let's do that. And Gus was sort of a laissez-faire, hands-off kind of sure. approach. Well, now everyone in the building is a little bit sharper.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. This side of the hallway, that side of the hallway. Not that Tom cares about over here,
right.
except where it applies to his football team. But that level of preparation, you see it in the players.
Yeah.
And one more quick story. The day the players came back after Doug had been announced as the interim coach, right? So that was Tuesday
mm-hmm.
before the Saturday game on Christmas Eve against the Titans. I literally stood outside and watched players run from their cars to the door to be on time for the 8 o'clock meeting. And in Gus's whole tenure, I had never seen that. That was not his priority. But they ran for Doug. That's what I think you're going to get. You're going to get a team that's tired of losing, that understands their jobs are dependent upon every single second of their day. Are they in the meetings alert? Mm-hmm. Are they on the practice field first? Are they last off? Is their locker clean? All of that counts to Tom. That sets the pace for Doug to do what Doug wants to do. I think Tom has a tremendous, if not always seen, impact.
I think what's fascinating on the front you're talking about, Doug, I forget when he said it. It was one time that I was interviewing him in the offseason. He sort of spoke to that urgency that they felt the first Tennessee week. And he said, without question, it was there. He also attributed a little bit to any time you change a coach, you're going to get the sort of thing you're talking about with the running to the meeting. I don't think he said this, but when he said that story and said, well, any time there's going to be a head coaching change, you're going to feel that. Now his charge is to maintain it. And I do think Doug Marrone has the personality type that sense of urgency will be maintained. And I think that's going to be the big question is, you know, can that pop that everybody felt Tennessee week maintain over the course of the season? That's the challenge. I tend to think it will, but that's definitely a storyline to watch this year.
So there are the big stories. And when we return in a couple of weeks with this podcast, and maybe more, folks, there's lots on the planning horizon for what we do here
right.
on Jaguars.com and through Jaguars Digital Media. We have some fascinating storylines to follow heading into camp, and these are but three of them. Obviously, the big one will be the quarterback, but why even bother with that now?
And it explodes once you get to camp, yeah. because then all of a sudden the Miles Jack story, the positive, the fullback story, the things that we can sort of talk about them during non-contact, but as Doug Marrone said in the last press conference he had, first 5 or 6 days of training camp, once the pads really go on. He was talking about the offensive line. It'll be huge for that. But he may actually have been talking about the whole team, because once hitting starts is when he's going to really start making decisions.
It's
going to get fun.
What was it that Dandy Don Meredith used to say at the end of the Monday Night Football broadcast?
Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Party's over.
Is this a party? I guess it is a party.
I'm kind of enjoying
I like
it.
That.
Yeah, there's no hats in here yet. But knowing you, there will be hats when we return.
I can't wait.
Party's over. And we are done. Talk to you in a couple of weeks with Senior Moments.